May the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts always be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Please be. It was the end of the world, or so they thought. Jerusalem was in ruins, the temple destroyed, and they were exiled to a foreign land for 70 long years. Our passage from Isaiah today begins with this line, "Oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down." Scholars believe this portion of Isaiah was written during the period of restoration, when the Israelites returned to Jerusalem from their Babylonian exile. After the hard work of rebuilding the temple was completed, and the hard work of rebuilding their society remained, and it didn't go so well. The Israelites always believed that God was intimately involved in their story. They had no doubt of that. But yet the story of what they were living was not like the story of old. There still was not a son of David on the throne. Israel was not the independent and powerful nation it once was. The people and the land were still subject to outside rule. First the Persians, then the Seleucids, the Egyptians, the Greeks, and eventually the Romans. The writer of today's passage from Isaiah is crying out a lament, urging God to perform awesome deeds as of old and hide away from them no more. Come down to us, tear open the heavens and come down is the cry. Remember us, Adonai, remember us, because we are your people. Sitting in a recent gathering of Christian leaders, I was reminded of this old lament. As the clergy went around the circle and shared updates, there was a recurring theme. My congregation doesn't get it that the church is in trouble. I heard statistics and catchwords that have been bandied about for many years by leadership and churches across the ecclesiastical spectrum in what some people believe to be post-Christendom America. Declining membership and declining giving to the church, aging congregations, near empty sanctuaries. When I hear these conversations, I know that I'm listening to a modern-day lament like that from Isaiah. It seems we are still waiting for God to come and restore us to our days of glory. Remember us, God. Remember us because we are your people. It's easy to be caught up in this pessimistic narrative because our cultural landscape can be so negative. Yes, I can go on and on about the negativity of our political landscape because following a national election like the one we just had a few weeks ago, I always feel like our country needs to seek out a 12-step program for the politically dysfunctional. But it's not just that. Our literature, television shows, and movies speak more and more of dystopia, meaning the opposite of utopia. Dystopia reflects a total lack of hope or confidence in the present or in the future. Watching shows like Breaking Bad or The Walking Dead have been guilty little pleasures for many of us. Movies like The Hunger Games and the current Interstellar portray a future of catastrophe, domination by evil, in a struggle to survive. Through these stories and others, we are surrounded by narratives of negativity, inevitability, and hopelessness. The church's lectionary, its assigned Sunday readings, doesn't really help with this mood either. Each fall, we begin a transition from the heartwarming stories of Jesus' miracles and his insightful teachings through parables that we have heard throughout the summer and early fall. But in the waning days of the season after Pentecost, the lectionary begins a sudden and violent tilt on its axis, reminding us that things are not as they should be. Just a few weeks ago, we heard the story usually labeled the parable of the foolish bridesmaids, where we were seemingly told to keep awake, or else we too may be locked out of the wedding banquet. The next week, it was the story of the talents, and if we take the safe road and we're just a little too cautious and a little too fearful, well, we get thrown into the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And finally, last week, it was the story of the king separating the sheep from the goats, and Aaron Jean challenged us to confront which one we might be. Are we sheep who will inherit the kingdom, or are we goats who are sent away into eternal punishment? More weeping and gnashing of teeth. What happened to the harmless mustard seed on which I preached in July? On this first Sunday in Advent, today's gospel is no different. It is naked apocalypticism, end time stuff, where we are left with a message to keep awake, stay alert. Mark's gospel was the earliest of our four gospels written, and it is a stripped-down, raw account of the life of Jesus, pulsing with the apocalyptic mindset of late Second Temple Judaism. Apocalypticism grew out of the Israelites' cognitive dissonance. Things are not as they should be. Since God was a God of justice, God must have a plan for their salvation and would deliver them. The seeds of this growing apocalyptic belief were sown centuries before the birth of Jesus and was at its height during Jesus' life on earth as the Israelites struggled with reconciling their belief in God's sovereignty with the reality of their lives. We hear that struggle in that first line from our reading from Isaiah. Come down, make things right. Similar to this Isaiah lament, we just sung my favorite Advent hymn, Come, Thou Long-Expected Jesus, born to set thy people free. We have this sense of incompleteness about our lives, about our world. Something is not quite right. We have experienced the life-giving presence of Jesus in our world and have been promised his return. This is the paradoxical nature of the season of Advent. We prepare for the coming of Christ who has already come. We prepare for the birth of Jesus whose birth changed everything and whose coming again will again change everything. And we pray, we sing, we long for this year after year after year. Or do we? Do we? I was advised that if I mentioned the apocalypticism in Mark's gospel reading, I was going to have to talk about zombies. Apparently, zombies and apocalypticism go together. So here's a shout out to those zombie lovers out in the pews. Let's not walk zombie-like into the new church year. Today, the first day of the church year, the first Sunday in Advent, let's be intentional in our waiting and longing for God's kingdom to come. Let's get in touch with the deep hope of transformation that Advent points toward. As we start this new church year, it is important to remember that the church devised this calendar in such a way that each year we would walk through the life of Jesus, allowing it to intersect with and slowly transform our own. As each liturgical season comes and goes, we immerse ourselves in the details of Jesus' life, how his earthly parents were prepared for his birth, and the story of his birth, how those around Jesus began to recognize him as God's gift to the world, how Jesus was tempted, how Jesus made friends and enemies, how Jesus lived out the ministry the Father gave him through teaching and working miracles, how Jesus suffered and how Jesus died, how Jesus rose to life and then ascended, drawn once again back into the Father's heart. As followers of Jesus, we walk through these events of Jesus' life so that we can attune our own lives to his. Through this, we can bring Jesus more deeply into the details of our own lives. Year after church year, as we more deeply follow the trajectory of Jesus' life, little by little we learn of what brings completeness into our own lives, of what makes our own lives matter as we tune our hearts more and more to the heart of God. As we walk this pilgrimage each year, we have made the choice to set aside our own daily meanderings to follow Jesus. In doing so, we set aside the primacy of our own lives, our own desires, and instead we place Christ in the center. And when that happens, the community around us begins to change, and the world and begin to be transformed, and the reign of God will come.